Please open your Bibles and join me in Zechariah chapter 6, verse number 9. It is somewhere in 519, maybe 518 BC, and the temple is being rebuilt by Zerubbabel and Joshua the high priest under the encouragement of Haggai and Zechariah the prophets. And Zechariah is given instruction to establish an important prophetic symbol relating to Joshua the high priest. And that is where we pick up today in Zechariah 6 verse 9. The word of he who is came to me, take from the exiles Heldai, Tobiah, and Yedaiah, and who have arrived from Babylon, and go the same day to the house of Josiah, the son of Zephaniah. Take from them silver and gold, and make a crown, and set it on the head of Joshua, the son of Jehozadak, the high priest. So he's been given an assignment to go to three men that have recently arrived from Babylon. They have silver and gold that they've brought with them that is being dedicated to the whole rebuilding of the temple project, reestablishment of the Jewish faith project. And he's to take some of that and make a crown fit for a king. And he's to put this on the head of the high priest Joshua, perhaps in a public ceremony. Might be private. It might be something just for the leadership, but somehow it's to be communicated that the high priest is not just going to be thought of in the future as the religious leader. There's also going to be a kingly element that's going to be rolled into the high priesthood. Now, that is significant historically and also messianically, as we will see here. So apparently he gets this thing made. Say to him, thus says he who is of the hosts, behold, the man whose name is the branch, for he shall branch out from his place, and he shall build the temple of he who is. Now, branch is something that's already being used in the prophecies for Israel about the reestablishment of the kingdom of the Messiah, the son of David, the descendant of royalty. The imagery is this: God in judgment chopped off the tree of David. But the stump was allowed to eventually put up a new sprig, a new branch, a new shoot. And that shoot, that branch, that sprig was going to become the new king, the eternal king, the prophesied son of David that will always sit upon the throne eternally. So the branch is a messianic title already. So now it's being directed toward the high priest and saying he's going to be branching out and rebuild the temple, which Joshua is already involved in. Keep reading, verse 13. It is he who shall build the temple of he who is, and shall bear royal honor, and shall sit and rule on his throne. And there shall be a priest on his throne, and the council of peace shall be between them both. So there seems to be a prophecy right here that the priest, the high priest, and the messianic king are going to be one in the same, which of course we know is true in Yehoshua HaMashiach, Jesus the Messiah. He is both the messianic king who will sit upon the throne of David forever and ever, but he is also the great high priest who gave of his own blood in order to redeem us from our sins. So this prophecy is ultimately fulfilled in Jesus. However, I want you to be aware of something else historically. And that is, a few centuries after this writing, in the time of the Maccabees, or the Hasmoneans, Judas the high priest, or Judas, who is the hero of the Maccabean period, who he didn't completely rebuild the temple, but he definitely repaired it and rededicated it. That's the whole story of Hanukkah, the rededication of the temple in 2nd century BC by Judas Maccabee. Once he did that, he started functioning as the high priest. After he was dead, one of his brothers started functioning as the high priest, but also the leader of the people. And then, after that brother was dead, another brother stepped into the role of both high priest and political leader. And I believe it was that brother, Simon, who then started being called king. And we ended up with the Hasmonean independent dynasty of the 2nd and 1st centuries BC. It is a kingdom of the Jews that the king was the high priest. And Herod the Great married into that family. He married the granddaughter of the final legitimate high priest king of that Hasmonean line, and thereby became the candidate in the minds of the Roman Senate to be the next king of the Jews. But here in this prophecy, I think there is a little bit of a hint of that coming Hasmonean high priest kingdom. But its ultimate fulfillment, let's make no bones about it, is fulfilled in Jesus. Now, back to the text, verse 14. The crown that's just been made will be in the temple of He who is, as a reminder to Halim, Tobiah, Yeradiah, and Chen, the son of Zephaniah. These, again, are the guys that were involved in providing the material and also having this crown made. And so this crown ends up being placed in the reconstructed temple as a reminder of this prophecy. Now, what happened to this crown after this? We don't know. I wonder whether or not it was utilized by the Hasmonean high priest kings as partial fulfillment of this passage. But what might have happened to it, ultimately, we do not know. If I could throw this out here as another just big-time wild speculation, what if God confiscated this crown at some point, much like He confiscated the Ark of the Covenant? Because the Ark of the Covenant disappeared before the temple was destroyed. And the next time we see it is in the book of Revelation. It's in heaven itself. And I've told you before, I'm of the conviction that when Jesus comes back, He will be bringing the Ark of the Covenant with Him and using it for what it really is, a throne. So I think the Ark of the Covenant will be Jesus' throne. And I think it's possible that God may have also confiscated this crown from Zechariah's chapter 6, and it is also waiting in heaven for the day that Jesus will be crowned King of Kings and Lord of Lords in His millennial and eternal kingdom. Wouldn't that be kind of cool to be able to see this crown? And if you want to even go farther, I think it's possible that the rod of power used by Moses and Aaron, the stick that turned into a serpent, the stick that was used for the ten plagues and for the crossing the Red Sea and all of the striking of the rock and all of that, it was in the Ark of the Covenant. I think it might be Jesus' scepter. Just throwing that out there for an interesting thing to chew on. Verse number 15. And those who are far off shall come and help to build the temple of He who is. Now, we've seen this prophecy already as well. And it is partially fulfilled in the fact that the Persian king has already said, we're going to foot the costs for rebuilding the temple and reestablishing the worship there at the Jerusalem temple. And later kingdoms of non-Israelis will do the same thing. They will participate in adding ornamentation to the temple complex and pay for the administration of the sacrifices and things of that nature. But ultimately, we know that Herod the Great, who was not Jewish, but had his family had adopted the Jewish faith before he was ever born, but he didn't have Jewish blood in him. He was Edomite. So he would be counted as coming from far off, non-Israeli. He comes along and he pays for a major renovation of this very temple that's being built by Zerubbabel and Joshua. And so that also is a fulfillment in part of this passage. Continuing in verse number 15. You shall know that He who is of hosts has sent me to you, and this shall come to pass if you will diligently obey the voice of He who is your God. So all of those prophecies laid out during the first couple of years of rebuilding. Now, how do we know that? Because chapter 7 tells us the next date in sequence, which comes a couple of years after the rebuilding project got restarted. Chapter 7 says, in the fourth year of King Darius, the word of He who is came to Zechariah on the fourth day of the ninth month, which is Kislev. Now, the fourth day of the ninth month, that throws it into winter, or very near to winter. In this particular year, it would have been the 7th of December, basically, of 518 B.C. Here's the record of the event. Now, the people of Bethel had sent Sharezer and Regemmelech and their men to entreat the favor of He who is, saying to the priests of the house of He who is of hosts and the prophets, should I weep and abstain in the fifth month as has been done for so many years? All right, so we've got people that have been involved in the return from Babylon, setting up homes in lots of different towns within a very short commute, shall we say, a few hours walk, maybe a day's walk of Jerusalem. So Bethel falls into that. So these people have reestablished themselves in Bethel, and now they've come down to Jerusalem to get some guidance on an event that is coming up. And that is traditional fasting time. The fifth month fast that they're asking about has to do with this passage from Jeremiah 52, verses 12 through 14. In the fifth month, on the 10th day of the month, which was the 19th year of King Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, Nebuzaradan, the captain of the bodyguard who served the king of Babylon, entered Jerusalem, and he burned the house of he who is and the king's house and all the houses of Jerusalem, every great house he burned down. And then all the army of the Chaldeans who were with the captain of the guard broke down all the walls around Jerusalem. So what's being commemorated with a great deal of crying and weeping and fasting is the Babylonian destruction of Jerusalem that happened on the 10th day of the 5th month. Now, modern day Jews, because they have been, convinced to follow rabbinical traditions rather than the clear-cut word of Scripture itself, they have moved this time of weeping to the 9th day of the 5th month. So it's the 9th of Ab, and you'll hear them talking about this as being a day of great sorrow at the burning of the temple and of Jerusalem by the Babylonians. All right, so back at this time, though, the temple is being rebuilt. Jerusalem is being rebuilt a little at a time. And so these guys that are living up in Bethel, they come down and start asking, well, since the desolation is almost over, are we supposed to keep up the traditional weeping and wailing and fasting on the anniversary of the destruction? We've been doing it for a very long time now. When this question is asked, it's pretty much the 70th year since the temple and Jerusalem were destroyed. So they've been at it for 7 decades. Verse number 4. Then the word of he who is of the host came to me. Say to all the people of the land and the priests. So you talk to everybody on this topic. When you fasted and mourned in the 5th month, that's for the destruction, and in the 7th, so we've got another fasting that's happening in the 7th month. Now, we need to point out that there's two fasting possibilities that we've got in mind here. Number one is Yom Kippur. That's the 10th day of the 7th month ever since Israel had founded as a nation. It was the day when all Israelis were to consider, without the sacrificial system, without the tabernacle, without the temple, without the ability to have the blood sacrifice, their sins could not be forgiven. They would be accountable for their sins. In other words, without a substitution blood, their blood would be required of them, their death and execution. So every year on the 10th day of the 7th month, they would fast and consider how important it is to be forgiven through the sacrificial system. So that's one possible reference here to the fast of the 7th month. The other one that you'll see in the commentaries, and I agree that it should be considered, is that in the 7th month of the year of the temple's destruction, of Jerusalem's destruction, the renegade fighters amongst the Jews had come to Jerusalem. Actually, they'd come to Mitzpah, because Jerusalem had been destroyed. They came to Mitzpah, just north and west of Jerusalem, and they killed the Babylonian governor, Gedaliah. Now, Gedaliah was Jewish, but he'd been appointed by the Babylonians to lead the remnant of Jews left in the land to work the agricultural fields. And so the assassination of Gedaliah became a time of grief and sorrow and fasting as well. So possibly one of those two, maybe both, is in mind here. So God says to them, when you fasted and mourned in the fifth month and in the seventh for these 70 years, was it for me you fasted? So did you do the fasting ceremony specifically for me? Or did you do it for you? Verse number 6. When you eat, when you drink, do you not eat for yourselves and drink for yourselves? Were not these the words that he who is proclaimed by the former prophets when Jerusalem was inhabited and prosperous, with her cities around her, and the south and the lowland were inhabited? So God's response through the prophet Zechariah is, look, guys, those things were all about you. They were all about your grief and your sorrow at the judgment. Now, that context that I was just referencing seems to me to be better with the seventh month fasting that they're asking about being the one over Gedaliah, because they were upset that he'd been killed because there might be reprisals from the Babylonians. So God is basically saying, look, you guys have been doing these fasts because you were upset that the temple was destroyed. You were upset that Jerusalem was destroyed. You were upset that Gedaliah was assassinated. You weren't doing that for me. That you were doing it for you. Verse number 8. The word of he who is came to Zechariah saying, thus says he who is of the hosts, render true judgments, show kindness and mercy to one another. Do not oppress the widow, the fatherless, the sojourner, or the poor. And let none of you devise evil against another in your heart. So now the prophet, at God's direction, goes off on the very things that the prophets of old were giving from God to the Israelites before the temple was destroyed, before they were taken into exile. They were being told to quit cheating each other. Quit just looking out for number one and abusing and misusing everybody else. Quit being sinners, because that's what brings the judgment of God. Continuing in verse number 11. But they refused to pay attention and turned a stubborn shoulder and stopped their ears that they might not hear. They made their hearts diamond hard, lest they should hear the law and the words of he who is of the hosts had sent by his spirit through the former prophets. And therefore great anger came from he who is of the hosts. So he says, historically, you guys need to pay attention. What got them into trouble was sin. And that's why the temple was destroyed. That's why Jerusalem was destroyed. That's what the circumstance was amongst the hearts of the people that assassinated Gedaliah. It was sin at the core of all of these things. And that's what needs to be repented of. Verse 13, as I called and they would not hear, so they called and I would not hear, says he who is of the hosts. So because they wouldn't listen to me, when they got in trouble, I wouldn't listen to them. And I scattered them with a whirlwind among all the nations that they had not known. And thus the land they left was desolate, so that no one went to and fro, and the pleasant land was made desolate. So the response is, those people brought it on themselves, and then when they grieved over it afterward, that was still all about them. Now, we haven't got to the answer yet about should they fast or not once the new temple is built. Let's continue. We've got a little bit of time left today in chapter 8. The word of he who is of the hosts came, saying, thus says he who is of the hosts, I am jealous for Zion with great jealousy, and I am jealous for her with great wrath. Thus says he who is, I have returned to Zion, and I will dwell in the midst of Jerusalem. And Jerusalem shall be called the faithful city, and the mountain of he who is of hosts, the holy mountain. So God is saying here, I am getting ready to get reestablished with these people, with a new temple, a new capital city, and a new relationship. And I want Jerusalem to be referred to as the faithful city. I want it to be the mountain of God, the holy mountain. Verse number 4. Thus says he who is of the hosts, old men and old women shall again sit in the streets of Jerusalem, each with a staff in his hand because of great age. So the prediction is Jerusalem is going to be repopulated with the wide range of age and gender. Men, women, young, old. And some of them will be very old, so that they'll have to use a stick to get around when they get up and walk. And that doesn't happen in a society that has been decimated and desolated by war ravages, because the old almost always disappear because of that. Verse 5, the streets of the city shall be full of boys and girls playing in its streets. So that's going to come back again. Thus says he who is of the hosts, if it is marvelous in the sight of the remnant of this people in these days, should it also be marvelous in my sight, declares he who is of the hosts. So if the people are excited about it, shouldn't I be excited about it as well? Thus says he who is of the host, behold, I will save my people from the east country, from the west country, and I will bring them to dwell in the midst of Jerusalem, and they shall be my people, and I will be their God in faithfulness and in righteousness. So the return is always about re-engaging relationship, to bring the people back from exile so that they can be in right relationship with God in faithfulness and righteousness. Come back tomorrow, and we'll continue with the passage.